Welcome back, everyone. We're Simply Bitcoin. We break down the news from Twitter, the Daily Fail, meme review, software releases, hardware releases, and the websites by plebs. Joining us today, fellow Bitcoiner, Mind Over Matter. All right, we're going to the numbers. Let's do it.
Number time.
Number time is brought to you by Bitcoin 2022. It's going to be the largest Bitcoin conference ever, but be quick to get your tickets because the price does go up over time. I have some good news. You can take advantage of the link down below for 10% off your ticket to Bitcoin 2022.
At the time of this recording, the block height is 715,009. The Bitcoin price, 46,860. Chain rewrite days, 766. Total public lightning capacity, a little bit of a climb from yesterday, 3,295.11. Moscow time, 21:34. Blocks to the halving, 124,991. Nico, the numbers.
The numbers, bro. Block height makes another all-time high. That's the signal. Node count continues to go up. Hash rate is healthy. But the caca fiat price, bro, boring AF. Phil, we just go back and forth about this topic every day, so I'm gonna pass it on to our guest, right? Because we have a different guest every time, dude,
right?
How have you been feeling about this consolidation period that we've been experiencing? Has it been as boring for you than it has been for us? What are your feelings about it, bro?
Yeah, totally. I think I, like most other people, thought we'd be higher by now. If you'd asked me like a year ago, I think, like most other people, I would expect us to be in the six figures by now. But kind of looking back at it, it's like all of 2021 kind of builds up a base. If you kind of look at it from, you know, that 30 to 60 ish K range. So again, we're kind of like normalizing like that, the way that like kind of that 8 to 11 K ish was normalized in like 2019 or so. Right. So if you think about it like that, and you think about it in terms of like 4-year cycles, you'll probably be disappointed. But if you think about us kind of breaking the 4-year cycle, which has kind of been my thesis as of late, then it's more just like, oh, okay, we're building up this new base layer of support going into 2022, normalizing mid 5 figures, and we'll be, you know, at 6 figures sometime in 2022, if not, then definitely by 2023. And again, all it's going to take is, you know, one big announcement, right? Like the thing is, like, we thought it was going to be the Tesla thing, but then, you know, obviously like that didn't work out how we expected. But I think we're kind of like really, you know, one big announcement away from things really taking off again. It's just, you know, there's been a lot of FUD this year. And think about it, we're at 46K with the China ban, you know, with everything that happened with kind of the EGS FUD. All things considered, it's not terrible.
Yeah, I think that I completely agree with that. We don't like to speculate on the show very much, but I agree with that set. Let's look at the past mostly. I agree with that sentiment where I think that the majority of people, all the TA guys on Twitter, all got it wrong, which is why we don't do TA on this channel. Everyone expected 100K Bitcoin by the end of the year minimum, and everyone got it wrong. And I think a major component of that, and I've talked to Phil at length about this, is that people underestimated how big of a deal the China ban was and how much affected the hash rate, right? And if you look at a chart and you look at the price drop and the hash rate drop, it looks very, very, like, it looks inextricably linked. And I think that a lot of people miss that, because I think that they had a target on a date, right? And they're like, no, the hash rate is irrelevant. And I disagree. I think the hash rate is the value proposition of Bitcoin. I think that the hash rate needed to recover before Bitcoin reaches an all-time high. But the good news is the hash rate has recovered. It did hit an all-time high not too long ago. So I agree. I think that, you know, not to speculate too much, I think that 2022 is looking good, but we shall see. Nobody knows. Anyways, Phil, check this out. It is by the way, it's a little bit of a Hopium account, but I'm not going to focus on the predictions too much. I'm going to focus mostly on the data, right? The reason for current extended sell-off short, Asia's largest exchange, Huobi, has stopped related trading in China because of the China ban. Bitcoin has been flowing from Asia to the US to Europe for some time, right? And this compares all the cycles, a really cool graphic. He goes, thanks to Ultra V2 for bringing the Asia sell pressure to our attention, right? And here's Asia, I don't know what MOM stands for, but change in Bitcoin price. And you can see just
I think that's month over month.
Thank you, Phil. I really appreciate that.
And no problem. Just
giant dump. And why would this happen? Of course, dude. People are, look, if it's illegal, right, what are they going to try to do? They're going to try to get their Bitcoin off Asian exchanges, right? So against expectations of cycle history, we've been hovering slightly below several key indications like on-chain. I don't know what that means, Phil. I'm so terrible at this. STH cost basis. If you know what that is, please let us know down in the comments. I know this means 21 weekly moving average.
It's short-term holder. So
thank that's you. Short-term appreciate holder. It. Short-term holder cost basis and 21 weekly moving average that historically defined bull and bear markets. This left us somewhat surprised as several think this cycle is not over. And I agree with that statement. And then here is the sell pressure from China's real Asia's largest exchange, Huobi, has closed OTC and exchange transactions. Many people have been forced to sell their Bitcoin because they're worried they won't be able to trade in the future, right? And look at that, dude. All these people are just taking their Bitcoin off the exchange or selling it. This is absolutely crazy. And a little bit of, I would say, I don't know, take this how you want it. Bitcoin on exchanges is getting scooped and has updated its three-year low, right? So that's absolutely crazy. The percentage of Bitcoin held on exchanges is at an all-time low in the last 3 years. Absolutely wild. That means that more people are buying and withdrawing and taking self-custody of their Bitcoin than in the last 3 years, including the previous all-time high, including the run-up to the previous all-time high, right? So absolutely crazy. You can kind of see the price fluctuations in this, right? This was the run-up to the all-time high back in April, May, right? You could see a lot of people sent their Bitcoin on exchanges. I think they were trying to sell into the all-time high. And then as you can see, you know, as we started to correct, right, over time, people have just been bullish about it, right? But again, I'm just showing you fucking data. It doesn't mean anything. All this magic nonsense and drawing lines and all these charts. But I thought it was interesting. I know there's a lot of hopium, but I think there's a lot of data there, right? Which is, look, more news of how much this China ban affected Bitcoin in general. But the good news is that Bitcoin survived. The hash rate reached an all-time high. Looks like the honey badger doesn't care, obviously, because the incentives are beautiful. And again, the other piece of data there is people are taking self-custody of their Bitcoin, the highest rate than in the last 3 years. And I think that's incredibly bullish, not so much for the price, because we don't like to talk about that, but more so for the revolution, right? People, it's good, bro. People taking self-custody and not leaving their Bitcoin, not leaving their keys with somebody else. Phil?
Saw a lot of selling there, right? I mean, that was pretty massive. Hash rate just hit an all-time high again, right? So we completely recovered. And on top of that, okay, we have these two things and the price is sitting at 46K. I mean, don't get me wrong, but like think about the dynamics of the things that are happening right now. And the price is sitting at 46K. More people are buying miners, right? More miners are coming online. I'm not bearish. I think there's still legs, you know, and it's I think it's like kind of, you know, what Mind Over Matter said before, that the pattern is changing. And again, right, I think it's foolish that, you know, that we think that because, you know, past performance is predictive of, you know, future performance, like that's not necessarily the case, because this is a hybrid asset that we've said before, right? People do not understand it. We don't fully understand it. We're all learning. So to sit there and think that, like, oh yeah, well, you know, we've looked at other assets similarly. No, you haven't. You haven't looked at similar assets at all. None of us have. We have Bitcoin. So
I think the variable that people don't appreciate a lot, and is the fact that this China ban happened and how much that affected Bitcoin in the short term, right? I think that people didn't appreciate how big of a deal that was. And you could see that sell pressure from Asian exchanges, the hash rate going down, the sell pressure from miners trying to relocate to new locations. And I think that a lot of people were blind to it because they were busy looking at Bitcoin from a TA perspective. But just to add to your point, Phil, right, now that we got that out of the way and we've recovered on a hash rate perspective, right, the node count has reached an all-time high. The transaction value, the amount of transactions, the metric that Samson Mao came up with, right, transaction volume per second or something like that, also hitting an all-time high recently. So, dude, it's exactly what you said. If you look at the data, it looks incredibly bullish for next year, but that doesn't mean anything. Raw Egg Nation, you want to wrap up the segment? What are your thoughts on all that stuff, that all the hopium that I just showed everybody?
Totally agree, right? I mean, and the other thing too is if you look at like what was going on in like April and May, you had, you know, levered longs that were, you know, APRs out the ass, out the roof, and now like leverage is low, right? Like people are, speculators are mostly gone at this point, right? It's out of the news, things. So this is, you know, we're building up this support base, you know, in the 40s and 50s, and maybe it goes in there 6 months. I don't know. But if I'm just looking at this from a probabilistic standpoint, now's about as good a time as it's been this cycle to get in, right? Like outside of the last time I can remember this good of an opportunity was probably like March, April, 2020. So if you're on the sideline thinking about it, you know, I feel pretty good that now's a good time to get in. Not to say it can't go lower. Obviously it can, but from a risk adjusted standpoint, it doesn't look much better. That like the data that y'all just presented tells the story. Everything looks good.
Absolutely. Everything looks good, but still that doesn't mean every time, but this doesn't affect you if you stack sats and just have a long time preference and, you know, don't try to time the market, because from our experience, that's how you wreck yourself, right? So anyways, just a little bit of data, you know, I know there's a lot of hopium today, but hopefully I provided some value. We provided some value. I don't know why I said I'm going to slap myself. It's bad, Nico. But anyways, Phil, it's time for
The Daily Fail. The Daily Fail is sponsored by Amber App. Check them out, amber.app. It's Bitcoin made easy. It's the easiest way to buy Bitcoin, and it's a stacking app by Bitcoiners. The link is down below. I've grown accustomed to calling Yellow the spokesmuppet, but yet we still have to explain what's going to happen so that we don't freak people out. Yellow, tell them what's going on. Tell them what to do.
Amber, the smart way to stack sats.
All right, we meant to do this one a couple of days ago, but didn't get a chance because there was so much other fail we had to dive into. We were tagged by ICO Sonat, so we appreciate this. So check this out, okay? You know how like we always rip on NFTs, right? Nico always, you know, he always shows you the printed one that he has, and we right click and save them every chance we get, because that's what you can do with pictures on the internet, okay? Anyways, so here we go. Let's dive into this. Let's dive into this tweet, and then we're gonna look at an older tweet. Okay, let's check this out. This is Liam Sharpie Sharp. I don't know Liam, but here we go. Artist, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, comic writer, The Brave and the Bold, novelist. Okay, so like probably somebody who's not old like me knows exactly who this is. All right, so. Here we go.
Sadly, I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, well, you know, younger than us, Nico, then I guess. But anyways, here we go. Sadly, I'm going to have to... You're younger than me, so don't worry. Sadly, I'm going to have to completely shut down my entire @DeviantArt gallery as people keep stealing my art and making NFTs. Oh my gosh. No way. NFT artist, not artist? No way. We don't believe that. Those little dots and the weird pretend pictures that like aren't even... you know, finger painting worthy? Okay. I can't and shouldn't have to report each one and make a case, which is consistently ignored. Sad and frustrating. So, we know, right? Like, we know. We've heard all the stupid narratives that you can possibly hear about this. So, I went and did some digging. okay, went and did some digging. And check this out, right? This was reported by Cointelegraph back in May, all right? May 17th. We're not even going to dive into the article, but I just want to make this point. Karacoin, a British BTC wallet provider, is launching an NFT platform to help Jamaican reggae artists protect their artistic legacy.
Artistic.
Protect. Artistic. All right, before we dive into the next fail, I just want to say, we've told you for I don't know how long that NFTs don't protect the artists. And this is hilarious because it's all coming full circle because actual artists, right? Actual artists are having their art stolen. So this is totally coming full circle. NFTs are just the absolute, I'm sorry, it's what we said from the beginning, it's just a Beanie Baby scam. This whole thing is just going to blow up and you're going to find yourself holding a bunch of useless, I'm sorry, they're going to be fun JPEGs. You can do a lot with the JPEGs. But the thing that you paid for the most that you don't realize is that unique hash ID. And that is completely freaking useless.
Man, this whole thing, it's just so freaking stupid. It's the ICO boom of 2017 over again. It's with pictures now. Everyone's jumping on the hype train. You have influencers. You have celebrities. Phil and I haven't reached out to a couple times, right? Everyone's just, you know, trying to get their favorite influencer to hype their, you know, right-click save JPEG. And yeah, man, but I think that example really highlights, you know, the dog shit that it is. What does it do? And I saw one of these lawyer videos. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm just reiterating what they said. But essentially, the topic of the video was, does an NFT protect me, like, in like, the traditional, you know, legal system? And the answer is no, unless you specifically register the copyright in the traditional way. Your art isn't protected at all, right? So what does it do? Like, I still don't know what it does. And you know, we've talked about this at length, and it's just, you're buying a hash. That's what you're buying. You're not buying the picture. Anyone could just make an exact copy of that picture by taking a screenshot of it, right? And I know a lot of people are like, oh yeah, but you're buying the art, and it's like, no, it's completely different. Because if you buy a painting in MeetSpace, right, and if it's like a painting by someone, you know, that's a very unique painting. Like, think about it. Like, the type of wood that they use in the canvas, the paint that the painter used,
the
brush strokes are different depending on the human that does it. Like, there's so many things that you could just tell, right, in the physical world, that in the digital world you could literally make an exact copy of, because it's all ones and zeros, right, at the end of the day, right? So it's just freaking stupid, dude. This whole thing is stupid. I think it's going to wash out, you know, the next bear cycle when it inevitably comes. And it, you know, what happens every bear cycle is that it humbles the crap out of these people, and then some of these people become Bitcoiners, and then the process repeat itself. But anyways, Mind Matter, we haven't asked you, what do you think about this whole NFT fiasco?
Yeah, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth with the bear cycle, right? So it's the bear market where you kind of figure out really what's worth the shit and what's not. And I think the people that are holding these, when we inevitably, you know, make a massive downturn, which is going to happen at some point, right, are going to probably, as you said, learn the hard way. Where you learn about stuff is the bear market, right? So again, like I got in 2017, you know, and like a lot of people did, you know, didn't really know what was going on. I mean, I did to some degree, right? Like I never like sold any of my Bitcoin I had bought from then, but it was really like kind of 2019 and like the heart of the bear market, where I actually kind of learned what Bitcoin was, realized, you know, what the repo markets were doing. And I did know in 2017, which is initially what pulled me in. But in terms of really getting a comprehensive understanding of it, that happens in the bear market. It just, it doesn't happen in these bull cycles. And that's where I think, you know, when we inevitably have this downturn, Bitcoin's going to show its strength, right? Because ultimately, obviously, Bitcoin's going to go down in a bear market. That's what it does. But it's going to go down way less than everything else. And, you know, people that are, you know, holding shit that's got a value of zero or next to zero are going to, you know, be in trouble, right? Things just don't go up forever, right? So I think it's the bear cycle where you actually learn at least for me, it was, right? It was like, I got in 2017, you know, bought like, I downloaded Coinbase. And at the time there was like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin. I bought all of them, right? Just like, oh, fuck yeah. And then like, you know, as you get further in and like, you actually kind of start to learn because you have to, right? You're forced to. It's not just speculative mania anymore. So we'll see about all of this come whenever the next bear cycle is, like you guys said.
Absolutely. I agree. I think, you know, I think that's a signal. But anyways, Phil, what is the next fail?
All right. So hackery.com, another day, another DeFi protocol hacked. This time it is Grim Finance to suffer an advanced attack and lose 30 million to hackers. It's a good name though, right? Grim? All right. Let's dive into the story. I don't even remember what the research is on this one anymore, but I remember it was funny. I remember at a few points I was like, this is funny. Anyways, so here we go. Okay, Grim Finance, a DeFi protocol and smart yield optimizer. I feel like we've looked at smart yield optimizers before, Nico. Mm-hmm. These are very good words. They make you feel like you're doing something. Smart yield optimizing. Anyways, it's announced that the platform was hacked Saturday 18th in an advanced attack. Doesn't matter what type of attack it was. You got rug pulled. I don't care whether it was advanced or stupid. Money's gone. Doesn't matter. Anyways, it allowed hackers to steal over 30 million worth of Phantom tokens. Grim Finance, and they've got a Phantom token. Anyways, all right. You can see their theme, right? They've got, like Nico has said in the past, right? They've got the good names. They've got the good theme going. Grim Finance explained that the attack was possible because unknown attackers exploited a flaw in its vault contract. Resultantly, the platform has paused all the vaults to avoid further damage as deposited funds are currently at risk. That's right. Decentralized finance has centralized vaults that can be paused for your safety. It's fantastic. First time I read this, though, it made no sense to me. The malicious token contract can start 5 re-entrancy loops from the safe transfer form, where in all 5 re-entrancies, the underscore pool value is set to the current balance. On the last safe transfer from, the re-entrancy loop is broken and some want can be transferred to the strategy. Now I know, right now, this makes no sense. It's going to make even less sense going forward, but at least we're going to be able to draw the lines. Strategy is not just the word strategy, I learned. It's actually something in this system, but we're going to see it later on again. Anyways, here we go. Although all vaults have been paused, Grim Finance is allowing users to withdraw their funds by unpausing some. Very noble, very nice of the king. Grim Finance is yet another addition to the list of crypto platforms that have suffered massive security breaches. On November 8th, hackers managed to steal $55 million worth of cryptocurrency from DeFi lender BZX, which we reported on, through a phishing attack. In another attack on December 17th, the Ascendex cryptocurrency exchange announced it was hacked and attackers stole a whopping $77 million by exploiting a vulnerability to access its hot wallets. Okay. Let's take a look at Grim's website. Now, usually I could scroll down on these things. Usually there's like some, you know, there's some meat and potatoes when you go down below, but all they have is this cool graphic and enter the app or watch their video. And then, of course, you can go talk to them on Discord, Twitter, GitHub. Here's their docs, which we are going to dive into. And of course, the all-important audit. Very important. Let's take a look first at the Grim token. Grim is a very special token and a labor of love for the community. Grim enables users to effectively become a shareholder in the Grim Finance platform and receive a distribution equal to 50% of our platform harvest fee, allowing users to earn rewards that grow directly alongside us with our, and here's the buzz term, TVL, right? Total value locked. They love that. They're very proud of that. Grim is designed to be deflationary, offering a competitive variable passive burn rate fee. This allows users to gain value from passively holding the token. I want you guys to keep in mind, they are deflationary. Okay, just keep that in the back of your head. They are deflationary. Okay, let's go take a look at the Grim distribution. Max supply, it's 10 million. You see what it says right below? Subject to change by the DAO. Okay, so not deflationary. This is magical. This is stupid. You're buying a shitcoin, okay? This is why. Like, when you actually read what they're telling you, you can dismantle any one of these. It's completely ridiculous. Anyways, let's continue, because we're not done yet. All right, so there's that, the BS of the max supply, okay? Then there is the audit, okay? Now, they had to update it to add that they got hacked on the 19th. But, they're letting you know in their audit, this is the safety that they have in place for you. Pay no attention that they were just hacked. It doesn't matter, okay? The re-entrancy guard is used in relevant locations to, and I'm sure they meant to write the word prevent, but for some reason nobody could look this document over. They were too busy, minting shitcoin. Anyways, to prevent re-entrancy attacks. Now, that's my personal opinion, but I'm pretty sure that many people will agree, especially the rug pull people. But it's interesting, right? Because the piece we read at the beginning had to do with a re-entrancy loop, but yet they've put in place a re-entrancy guard supposed to prevent the... Doesn't matter. Okay. Note that the strategy... See, there's that word, strategy, okay? So that random word in the other article that meant nothing, apparently it has to do with some type of contract that they have. So here we go. Note that the strategy contract, not reviewed by our team, will have significant control of deposited funds. They got hacked for $30 million worth of tokens from the strategy contract. The best part, right? The audit summary. No issues from external attackers were identified, but yet they were hacked through the strategy contract, which is not reviewed by their team at... It's okay. They ensure trust in the team as the owner has the ability to change the strategy contract, the burn fee and the LP fee at any time. So they're just telling you that they can rug pull you and do whatever they want at any time. And then, of course, that was back in August. And yet, here we are in December getting rug pulled. So that's what happened to Grim Finance. If you read more than 10 minutes on this thing, there's no way you would have put a penny. Okay, if you don't understand Bitcoin and you think that these ridiculous projects make sense, do yourself a favor. Take the time, read their ridiculous literature and find the holes. Your money will thank you. Your value will thank you. Your time will thank you. And your future you is going to be thrilled that you didn't buy this garbage.
Absolutely. The end. Absolutely. Beautifully done. I want to talk about this crazy idea or this crazy thing called trust. And Bitcoin, the innovation, what they figured out is essentially minimizing the trust as much as possible to the point where you really don't have to trust that many people in Bitcoin. And what I see with these NFTs and with these, smart contracts and all that, is that you're trusting a group of individuals with a tremendous amount of your value, right? They don't even take the time to spell check what they're writing. They contradict what they say in one part of the white paper versus the other part of the white paper. So, like, why is this happening? The reason it's happening is because it's so easy for them just to spin up another one and then just do the same thing over and over again. And a lot of these guys, they run out with your Bitcoin. That's what they exchange your said shitcoin and they just come out with Bitcoin. So these smart contracts, these shitcoins, these rug pulls, these hacks, what they are is redistribution of wealth from the noobs getting into, I hate using this word, but crypto, and it's redistribution back to these scammers or these developers. I would say the majority of these smart contracts, they end up being rug pulled, they end up being scams, right? And the ones that don't get scammed or don't get hacked in the immediate term, over the long term, they don't perform as well as Bitcoin, right? Including in the top 10. So again, why are you gonna own the second or the third? And I hate using second or third best, but it's like, if Bitcoin was number one and all the other shitcoins were down here, 300 feet below, right? I guess there needs to be a second best. Why are you going to own something that requires another human being? Like, why? Why are you going to do that, right? Or you could own Bitcoin that has no CEO. I wouldn't say it's completely trustless, but it's extremely trust minimized. And I'll say this, it's definitely as trustless as it could be, and especially compared to the other things that you can own. man, Bitcoin is very, very high up that list. Like, the other thing that is like gold, right? Physical possession of gold. Because even real estate, you have to trust in the state to essentially, you know, protect your property, right? Because think about it, someone could just take it. Who are you going to go to? You're going to go with the you're going to go to the people with guns. Now, gold is the only thing that you could really say you could take self custody of. But could you multi-sig gold? Could you verify your gold yourself? Could you do that? Is something that you're qualified for? Or what if you have $50 million worth of gold? Like, could you move that gold easily? Right, gold's really heavy, right? So, what thing could you easily verify? You know, easily verify that you have that possession of it, right? Easily store, easily send. It's only Bitcoin, right? All these other shit coins, you're still trusting somebody else, whether it's the foundation, whether it's the CEO, whether it's the developer. You're trusting those people not to shit the bed, right? So the element of trust is not taken out of the equation. I think that's the innovation with Bitcoin. And that's what these shit coins fail to forget. And these noobs just don't know. Anyways, Mind Matter, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, totally right. I haven't even spent much time thinking about like Grimm or whatever other these protocols, just because they don't seem relevant, right? To me, they're a distraction more than anything. So I think the bear market's going to do what it did last time and just kind of it'll take care of all that. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like you said, if they would have gone to the website in 10 minutes, you could see kind of where the contradictions are. So if you can't do 10 minutes of research, then maybe you don't need your money anyway, right? Like at that point, I really can't feel too bad for you, because a fool and his money are soon parted. And if someone's going to invest in something like that, then they probably don't need money anyway, it sounds like. So I don't have much to say on this outside of like, yeah, I mean, A, the bear market's going to take care of it, and B, I just have kind of little sympathy for somebody that's going to invest in something like that.
No, exactly. You know, and like, and that's exactly the point, right? Like the, you know, that's kind of one of the reasons why we bring the fails to the, you know, to the forefront, because to show, you know, to show the ridiculousness of it all is very important. Because you've got all, you know, they've got a whole bunch of marketing teams showing just how serious and how amazing they are at doing whatever it is that they do. Anyways, I do want to give a shout out to Sparky from our Telegram group, who dropped that in the who actually dropped that fail in there for us. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. Excellent fails, Phil. Very good research. He keeps getting better. I like full-time Phil. Full-time Phil is a good Phil. But anyways,
full-time Phil.
They're all good Phils, but full-time Phil is a more concentrated, accurate Phil. So yeah,
focus,
laser focus. Anyways, Phil, it's time for the Daily Meme Reviews. The Daily Meme Review is brought to you by Citadel 21. It's the best Bitcoin cultural zine. There's comics, articles, stories by Bitcoin plebs, pure pleb signal. But be quick about it. There's only 1,000 copies made per volume. Get your print of Citadel 21 today. All right, everybody, we are going to change it up. Phil is going to host the Meme Review. I don't know what these memes are today. I haven't even looked at them. Phil is going to host this from the beginning to the end. Please let us know down in the comments. Give us some feedback what you think, if you like the change-up. I personally like the change-up. I think it's awesome. Anyways, Phil.
Hello and welcome to my meme review. I'm your host, Phil. Okay, no, so here we go. All right, so the first one, we actually came from a fail, okay, that we had, but it was posted back into the group, into our chat as a meme to review. And it's a meme review. So here you go. Okay. So internet may be just a passing fad as millions give up on it. And that was from December 5th, 2000. Now, I remember when I covered it in the fail, I'm dyslexic. And, you know, I read it as December 8th. I think 2001 or something like that. I don't even remember. But anyways, it's December 5th, 2000. And take a look at that, right? Internet may be just a passing fad as millions give up on it. I mean, look, it's not a meme, but it's a meme, right?
Totally a meme.
It is. Okay. All right. Here's one from Bitcoin Baddie, all right? Or at OX Bitcoin Baddie. Buy the dip. Indeed. We bought the dip today, so here we go. Just picked up your Christmas present, 30% off. It's BTC.
Look at her face.
Yeah, that's... her face is pretty descriptive of... of when you buy your, depending on your spouse, of course, but you know, if you buy your spouse BTC, they may not find that as fun or exciting as jewelry or a Louis or both or that and a vacation or all three. Just saying.
At the same time.
At the same time. Of course, at the same time and all three. Okay. So this one is, I'm going to try at V. Okay. I'm sorry, dude. That's not happening. But here we go. This is definitely a great meme. Bitcoin 2009 to 2021, USD 2013 to 2021.
That's a great, powerful meme, dude.
I mean, that is very well done.
Very well done. I agree.
Right?
Very well done.
Yeah, I agree.
Very well done.
It made me happy. Made me happy. So good job at all those letters and numbers.
That's how you pronounce it.
Bless you. Bless you. All right, next. And of course, I made it into the meme review. And this is from at BTC Padre. Keep in mind, that is not me before Bitcoin. He just took that picture from some soy dude. I retweeted it. I mean, I think these are great. But even my glasses aren't that bad.
No, your glasses have style.
But they're close.
His glasses are like utility glasses, you know?
They're close. But yeah, I thought that was a pretty good one. Okay, here we go. All right, I had to zoom out to fix this, and even that didn't really help. But here we go. This is from at Rory Highside. Okay. This is all that stands between you and your Ethereum. Okay. Now some context.
I don't get it. Oh. Proof of stake versus proof of work. Oh, man, that's good. That is really good. That is hilarious. That's a good one.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh, but it's funny. Okay, so here we go. RDBTC, but this was tweeted by at Bitocrates or Bitocratus, and it's RDBTC's original meme. Crafted this fitting meme. Here we go. Governments, how to stop Bitcoin. You can't. And that is perfect. That is perfect, especially falling on the heels of yesterday's China article that we read. All right, Nico, since I get to host the meme review, I would like you to go first.
Man, that was a great meme review. Please let us know down in the comments what you thought of Phil hosting the meme review. And it's a meme review because we need memes, because it's a meme review. Anyways, for that, exactly, we don't need memes. I gave you a curveball. But anyways, I'm going to give it a Raspberry Pi fan you use when you build yourself your own node. Which I did. I built myself the basic node, but for the Trident case, I needed Phil's help because I don't know how to solder cables. Phil?
All right. Well, you know what? Interestingly enough, as weird as it is, and we don't discuss our scores before the show, I also took a tech turn to this one, and I went with, okay, not a fan, but this helping hand. Right, that's what these are called, the helping hands. Right, so when you're soldering stuff, they hold the board in place for you, so you can, you know, hold your solder and the iron.
Very good score.
Helping hand.
You always need a helping hand. This is true. Mind Matter, if he's still here, would you give those memes?
I would 10 out of 10 for all of them. If you have a bottle of hot sauce,
that's numbers and hot sauce.
10 out of 10 and hot sauce. Great scores for those awesome memes. Anyways, guys, we want to know, do you agree with our scores? Do you agree with Phil hosting the meme review? Let us know down in the comment section. And of course, you guys know the drill. We say some things that might piss off the wrong people. We do talk about central banks. So subscribe to us on alternative video platforms like Rumble.com and our personal favorite, BitcoinTV.com. It's our personal favorite because they don't censor, because it's BitcoinTV.com. And of course, join our Telegram group, link us some Bitcoin memes to review. But anyways, Phil, it's time for the Daily News. The Daily News is brought to you by CryptoCloaks.com. They make the best 3D printed Bitcoin merch, like the Bitcoin Freedom Grenade. It unscrews, you put your open dime in there, really cool stuff. Or the 3D printed Honey Badger opens up, you put your cold card in there, really cool stuff. Anyways, take advantage of the link down in the link description for 5% off CryptoCloaks.com. All right, everybody. So check this out. I'm going to connect the dots like I try to do every day. Check out this tweet by Jamie W. Garcia. And the original tweet was in Spanish, and this is the translated version. A couple days ago, Chivo Wallet released their 2.0 app update. I ran several test transactions and it seems to be more stable. Transactions are not getting stuck. Lightning usability is better. The update description claims improved security, but I can't verify how. And here is the actual screenshot from the App Store. Some actual screenshots from the Chivo app. Absolutely mind-blowing. And just keep in mind, everybody, that this is a government app for Bitcoin that enables Lightning transactions, that enables, you know, sending and receiving Bitcoin. It also enables people to send remittances from the United States back to El Salvador. Absolutely crazy. Now, kind of compare that to the situation that you have in Western countries that most benefit from the legacy financial system. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to hold on to that fiat, that power that comes with the fiat money printer. And they're trying to, you know, just jam in these central bank digital currencies. And, you know, it is kind of depressing. And when I see El Salvador, I see hope. And in the book, The Sovereign Individual, he actually talks about essentially, because of how much power semiconductors and in, you know, Bitcoin, you could all put it together, but essentially how much power each individual will have in the information age, what you'll start to see happen is people will leave Western countries as they lose their competitive advantage. Because think about it, now the internet pretty much connects each other. So that competitive advantage that you had to live in a certain place, right, in a certain location in the United States, isn't so actually competitive anymore. But it's not only me speculating this, right? Here is some actual data from Axios. Wealthy people are renouncing American citizenship. And why is it that they're renouncing it? Look, it reached an all-time high in 2020. And I suspect that number is going to accelerate, just like he predicted in The Sovereign Individual. Anyways, where it stands, the IRS published a quarterly list of the names of people who have renounced their citizenship or given up their green cards. I love how they make a list. It's like, these are the people that betrayed. You know, it's so stupid. Anyways, the numbers started swelling in 2010 when Congress passed the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, which increased reporting requirements and penalties for expats. FATCA kind of flushed people out of the bushes, says Andrew Mitchell, an international tax lawyer based in Connecticut who tracks the numbers. It effectively deputized all the banks around the world to tattletale on U.S. citizens, right? So kind of connect everything, right? When you had to essentially be in a certain location to make a certain amount of money, these types of regulations work for the government, right? They work for their advantage, right? It tries to squeeze as many pennies as possible out of their populace. It doesn't matter anyways because they spend more money than they collect in taxes anyways. But put that aside. So, but now that we're essentially live in a world where you could have a Zoom call like we're on right now, and we could literally meet hundreds of miles away from each other in instant time. You could have work literally on a remote basis. I know, Phil, in your old job, you essentially, once everything happened, once, you know, the sickness hit, right? You know, they just went to remote work, and you see a lot of other companies doing the same. So what is the advantage of living in the US anymore? Right? Before, it was your only option because you had to be in a physical location. But as the world transitions more into the information world, what you'll see is governments compete for your citizenship, compete for your business. You're already seeing that in El Salvador, right? Nayib Bukele knows exactly what he's doing. He announced the Bitcoin City with 0% income tax, 0% property tax, 0%. Why did he do that? To incentivize Bitcoiners to leave their countries and to move to El Salvador. Why? Because there's no tax, right? And what you'll start to see, right, as, you know, the Bitcoin game theory plays out and Bitcoin becomes legal tender in more countries, you'll see other countries want to compete for El Salvador, the Bitcoiners that are going to El Salvador. And what are they going to do? They're going to lower their taxes also. So right now, in this moment in time, it might not make sense, right, to move to El Salvador, right? But in 10 years, bro, I bet you there's going to be a ton more countries that make Bitcoin legal tender, and you're going to you as an individual are going to have the advantage for the first time ever over the state in picking and choosing where you want to go based on the most on the best laws in that jurisdiction. Right. So and you see this playing out. Right. You see this with the Axios report that I just showed. You see this with the Lightning update. Right. This is the future, man. This is just the beginning of what's going to happen. And it's exactly what Phil and I have been saying for so long. Governments, instead of looking at their citizens essentially as tax cattle, they're actually going to have to start providing value. Right, for their citizens to stay there, or else their citizens are just going to put their arms up and say, why should I stay there? And if you don't believe me, this is already happening on a micro scale within the United States as people leave California and New York to Texas and Florida because of the totalitarian laws and because of the tax laws in those states, right? So what happens on the long scale? Texas and Florida benefit, and New York and California lose their top income tax bracket, right? As those people flee to more favorable jurisdictions, right? So anyways, Phil, what are your thoughts on all this?
You know, I find it very hypocritical and interesting about us, right? Because human beings, I think, you know, whether people want to agree with this or not, I think that the overwhelming majority of us are lazy at our core. Okay, and that's one of the reasons why innovation works so well, right? Because we want to do less and we want things around us to kind of work on their own. So it's kind of interesting that the government, I shouldn't say it's interesting, but it's funny because governments rather spend money setting up these bullshit associations to hunt you down all around the world so that they can nickel and dime you till you drop dead. But yet they are not going to sit there and look at themselves in the mirror and say, I'm a useless piece of crap. And you know what? The people deserve better. It's interesting, right? It's like because they wouldn't want to be governed by them, and yet there they are. So I find it's totally hilarious, right? Like when you read that article about, I don't know what the hell that agency was called, the FATCA or whatever, another one of these, you know, financial checkers. These people are ridiculous. And again, it just goes back to what I just said. They rather hunt us all down and nickel and dime us than actually sit there and make a productive government that creates value. And to your point, Bitcoin fixes this. And it's going to fix it going forward. Because guess what? Like you said, governments are going to want to, you know, they are going to want to battle for our, you know, for our business, right? As individuals. And they're going to want to have maybe the, you know, the most productive individuals in society, in their cities and in their country. So, you know what? We're going to see what the future holds.
They think they own you. That's the thing. Like, yeah. They think they own you. And here's the thing. Like if the internet wasn't around in a way that they do, and especially if you're using their money, if you're using their system, right? Like they do own you in a way. But if you're using Bitcoin and with the internet, it's like you're no longer using their money, right? You no longer have to be tied to a location, right? So what incentive do you have to remaining in a country or in a nation state that's actively hunting you down where there's another one that's developing a Lightning app? You know what I'm saying? That has 0% income tax. It's like, what incentive do you have to stay there, right? There's comfort and there's family. But again, try squeezing and try doing passing more laws and being more totalitarian. And there's a breaking point where people are just going to weigh the pros and cons and say, yeah, I'm not going to stay here anymore. We've already seen that on Twitter of people fleeing their country and moving to El Salvador already because they're just sick and tired of the totalitarianism, or they're sick and tired of regulations in those countries. Right. Mm-hmm. So, again, I think that's a foreshadowing of what's to come, dude. It makes me so incredibly bullish on the future. Anyways, Mind Matter, what are your thoughts on? Are we seeing things that are not there?
Yeah, I mean, y'all articulated it perfectly, right? The fact of the matter is, the only incentive to stay in a country like the U.S., right, is family, right? Family, you know, people. So that's going to keep most people around for the most part. But if it, like, take that out of the equation, there's no incentive, right? And I've talked about this before. People still have this kind of model of the U.S., especially kind of like, you know, kind of older generations, Gen Xers, boomers, that like the U.S. is what it was in like 1995, right? This kind of like flawed model from like 25, 30 years ago, where the U.S. was really kind of the capital of innovation, you know, and things were kind of like broadly good. The U.S. barely qualifies as a first world country. It really, I mean, the inner cities are terrible. It's overrun with crime, homelessness, all of this stuff that's, you know, broadly kind of downstream of the money, right? And so, yeah, like why would you not want to go somewhere in Latin America where, you know, the prices are, you know, 1/10 or 1/20 of what they are in the U.S., where it's not a government that's, you know, as hostile to you in terms of the tax laws. Maybe in some places they are, but for the most part, they're not as hostile to you. Why would you not want to go to some place where the food's better, the water's cleaner? Like, I mean, again, like what you saw, you know, in the latter half of the 20th century, right, was like a migration to the United States and just broadly to Western countries. What you're going to see going forward is a migration away from the U.S. because the U.S. is effectively a failed state at this point, right? And you know, whether it be kind of El Salvador, whether it be, you know, other, whether it be Paraguay, whoever the next kind of one to jump on board here is, you'll see people following the innovation, following where there aren't these kind of draconian laws, and just kind of starting lives there. And will it happen all at once? No. And largely just because, you know, family, social network, and all that stuff's still here. But like, as you kind of get like the first kind of person or two in any one group, and then they're like, well, I got a couple buddies down there, why not go down there? And then you'll just see people just starting families, and they'll just leave the U.S. behind. Because again, the United States is a dying empire in every aspect of it. And people that just haven't caught up to it yet, that think it's still 20 or 30 years ago, are going to have a really bad time. So again, yeah, I think it's just going to incentivize people to get to actual, what will be the kind of first world country of the future, which will largely be in Latin America and maybe, you know, Southeast Asia.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that viewpoint. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And, you know, the U.S. and Europe and the U.K., they're going to be some of the last countries that are going to be friendly towards Bitcoin the way that El Salvador and all these countries, because they most benefit from the fiat legacy printer. So when you legalize Bitcoin as legal tender, you're essentially saying this is legal tender, right? And essentially that kind of shakes up, you know, currency in people's mind, because then you start looking at Bitcoin the way you look at the US dollar, and, you know, in the eyes of the masses. I'm not talking about, you know, the orange pilled, but, you know, it's unfortunate, dude. But anyways, let's see. And another thing that I wanted to add is that Bitcoin gives you the ability to vote with your feet and also your wallet. You can take your wealth with you very easily, right? Before, you couldn't do that. I've heard horror stories of people storing their gold in their freaking teeth, you know, and that was essentially how they brought their wealth with them, or hiding their gold. Now you could memorize a 12-word phrase in your mind. Absolutely crazy. But anyways, Phil, you were so freaking right, my dude. Check this out. So Phil, just to kind of give you guys some context, and again, we don't care about, you know, the virus and Omicron and all that BS, but Phil said this very in a very wise manner. He said they needed an excuse to keep on printing money. Now, I'm not going to comment on, you know, the virus and Omicron and any of that stuff, because it's a hot topic. We just don't want to talk about that. But I want you guys to view these articles as they're trying to sell you a narrative. They're trying to sell you an agenda. And keep in mind, I live in Florida, okay? Florida has been open, you know, for business for a very long time now, right? And you have countries and states that all over the world that remain shut down, right? And if you actually look at, you know, the mortality rate of this virus, it looks like it only affects the immunocompromised and the older part of the population. But in the younger part of the population, if you are healthy, right, the survival rate is actually extremely high. And if you do decide to take the vaccine, right, it's actually essentially you're okay. This isn't something that you should worry about, right? But if you read this, right, essentially what it's trying to make the argument for is that Omicron variant starts to take a toll on business, right? No, the narrative gets even more interesting. Phil, check this out. Central banks worry Omicron could sustain inflation. Really? That sounds like very convenient, excuse my language, excuse. That's what it sounds like, right? Because this isn't a pandemic of, 20% mortality, 30% mortality that we saw with H1N1, with the swine flu like 20 years ago that had crazy mortality rate. It's not that type of mortality rate. For young people, if you get, and I'm not saying, for older people, it can be dangerous, right? But again, for the majority of the population, this thing doesn't really affect you, right? So again, this is a crazy narrative. Anyways, let's dig into the article a little bit. The Omicron variant is circling the globe, closing borders, sparking new restrictions on economic activity. I'm going to rephrase that. The government is circling the globe, closing borders, and sparking new restrictions on economic activity. How do I know this? I live in Florida. Florida's been open. I go to a supermarket. No one's wearing masks. And everyone's okay. The restaurants. Doing fine.
They're not all dead?
No one's. It's like the virus didn't cause the closures. The governments did. That's what's going on here, right? And again, in the beginning, you could say it was justified because it was novel. No one knew any idea what this thing was, so it was very scary. But 2 years later, more shutdowns, more lockdowns, and clearly they don't work. So what's going on here? Just makes you ask questions. Anyways, yet central banks, instead of loosening monetary policy to prop up their economies as they did at the start of the pandemic, are moving to unwind stimulus and raise interest rates. Let me translate that for you. Yet central banks, instead of printing money to prop up their economies as they did at the start of the pandemic, are moving to unwind stimulus and raise interest rates. So governments are still printing money like crazy, but this article is trying to get ahead of that because Powell essentially announced last week that he's going to raise interest rates by 0.25. This article is essentially saying, hey, you can't raise them. You got to keep printing that money because of the Omicron. It is such mierda. Anyways, the moves reflect a new thinking among policymakers about the pandemic's economic effects. Central bank officials worry that rather than simply threatening to curtail economic growth, a surge in virus cases could also prolong high inflation. In the past week, the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, and the European Central Bank all moved to tighten monetary policy in response to inflation concerns. See? This line right here, let me read it, sorry. This line right here was a response to this. This is what I was just talking about. Federal Reserve, Bank of England, European Central Bank moved to tighten monetary policy, which means that they signaled that they were going to stop printing money at the rate they were printing. And then, coincidentally, this article gets released a couple days later criticizing the fact that they're going to stop printing money at the rate they're printing. It's absurd, dude. Okay, anyways, when the pandemic first became widespread in early 2020, governments locked down their economies. Consumer spending fell sharply, employees shed workers, prices fell. Within a few months, the rise of e-commerce and remote working allowed the economy in many developed countries to recover rapidly. With Max, I can't say that word, that recovery has continued this year. So, again, the reason I'm reading that article, guys, and I'm trying to essentially make you guys see it from the lens that we're seeing it, and not put all the stuff aside that's very controversial and we don't want to talk about that. I just want you guys to look at it from they're trying to set a narrative and they're trying to incept you with this idea that we need more stimulus, that there needs to be another stimulus package, that there needs to be more money printing because this is the only way, right? Man, it's absolutely crazy. And Phil, did you fucking call it a couple months ago when you first started talking about this?
But dude, did you see that fantastic little play that they put on? It was the Theater del Circle Jerk, dude. Right?
So it was. It was.
Tell
it
you
was.
That they have to raise the rates, and then they're like, "No,
no, don't do it." The Omicron is here, and it's like,
here. We need to print.
Like, just come to Florida. Come. I'm telling you, you'll be mind blown. You're like, holy fuck! How are you people not dying and dropping left and right? What's going on? Right. So it really makes you wonder. Right. Like, what is going on here? These are a lot of convenient excuses. Right. A lot of totalitarianism. Phil, I just feel like this is just one big fucking excuse to print more goddamn money.
And what we should be really worried and concerned about, unfortunately, like I hate to be that, you know, that bearer of like, you know, bad news. It's my opinion with my tinfoil hat on that they're going to have to keep coming up with more difficult reasons to print money, right? Like, you know, you and I have discussed this before. They're not getting that much bang for the buck anymore.
No,
you know what I mean? Like, they barely got, like, think about it. Think of all the money printing that they did. And here we are 2 years later and nothing has changed. It's only gotten worse. Everything has gotten more expensive. Now, on top of that, right? On top of the inflation that they can't keep under control, okay? You know, now again, we have this re-emerging narrative that we need to lock down and the cold winter and businesses will suffer. And it's like, are you kidding me? Really? Like, it's like, so this is unfortunately my point is that they're going to, like, reasons are going to be manufactured to continue this along. Okay.
Yeah, and like, and again,
it's just sad.
Hold on. I want to put a my giant opinion. I want to put a giant asterisk, right?
Yeah.
Look, if you think we're conspiracy theorists, watch our episodes about a year ago. And we essentially predicted this accurately, that this is exactly what was going to happen. They were just going to come up with more excuses to print more money. And why is that? Because the gig is up. If they stop printing, the economy, all of it, it's a giant fucking collapse. Like,
it falls apart.
Falls apart. And if they keep printing, inflation. But the thing is, all the government has ever done is just print more money, throw money to solve problems. But this time, fiat being 50 years old, give or take, right? Give a little bit on the upside. There's no more, and you know the expression is just kick the can down the road. There is no more road to kick the can down. The gig is up, right?
There is no can.
There is
no road. There's
you
no
look
can.
Down. There's no it's can.
Just a, it's just a hallucinating senile person doing terrible things with everyone's value and time. Sorry.
And look, like, we try to use reliable sources. Those are articles from the Wall Street Journal. Right. And that is the language that they're using. Right. And again, you know, Phil and I are just two idiots on YouTube. You read those articles and you're just like, what the fuck are wrong with these people? What's wrong with these people? They're lying through their teeth. It's so freaking obvious. Anyways, Mind Matter, what are your thoughts? I know you've been vocal about this subject on Twitter. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you guys completely nailed it. Right. There's no way out. Right. So they, like, what happens if they raise rates, right, significantly, right? With where debt to GDP is at, you're just going to have cascading bankruptcies and liquidations. So, I mean, you're talking about, like, a 1930-style collapse.
Could you elaborate a little bit more on that, by debt, by GDP? What do you mean by where it's at? Like, could you – because we haven't talked about that at all whatsoever.
Yeah, sure. So, debt to GDP globally is, like, at like 380 or 400%, right? So, and just for and that doesn't mean anything out of context, but in the 1970s, right, the last time you had kind of rampant inflation like this, it was like at 120-130%. So, right, like, if you raise rates a little bit, then, you know, you're gonna have some zombie companies go underwater like you did kind of 40-50 years ago. But, well, ultimately, and this is what Volcker did, right, in the 1970s, like he raised rates. I think the treasury is at, like, I mean, it was over like 10%. It might have been like close to 15% at the time. But you had room to maneuver because you didn't have kind of the debt to GDP, right? The current fiat monetary experiment was in its kind of relatively early days, right? I mean, if you go back to kind of Bretton Woods, we've been on fiat at least since like 1944. But like in terms of it not even being kind of fractionally reserved by gold, it's only been since 71, obviously. So mathematically, right, like it's you have are literally between a rock and a hard place. So like the last chance the Fed really had to do something might have been 2008, right? Because if you look at like 2008, right, you had the rate on the Treasury was like 5.25, and so you know that they cut it all the way down to zero because of the collapse. But what they could have done then was just not bail out the banks, right? Like, and then you live with that collapse and you kind of rebuild. But because they didn't do that, right, and the derivative markets expanded exponentially since then, debt to GDP is higher than it was 13, 14 years ago. Now it's literally like one or two ways out. Like, well, it's like you guys said, you are at the end of the road, right? It's like, it's a mathematical, you know, possibility to get out of this. So what you have to do is you either soft default, which I think they're going to do, and that's continue to backstop the entire like credit markets, right? Treasuries, agency MBSs, CLOs, everything. Or they actually, you know, stop printing, let rates rise, and then you just have cascading bankruptcies, liquidations. Because what happens is, like, if you look at it, like, where the yields on just the corporate debt are, it's like 4 or 5%, right? The riskiest of the debt. Imagine if they stop backing that, right? Like, that immediately goes underwater, and that has cascading effects throughout the entire economy, because it's not just that, like, the fact that, like, the treasury market goes underwater, right? It's the agency market that underbacks the majority of the housing market goes underwater. The CLOs, which brought back, you know, most of the corporate debt in the country, that goes underwater too. So it really is like a mathematical impossibility for the Fed to get out of this at this point. And so I think what they have to do is, you know, you keep printing, but again, you have to have reasons to print, right? As you guys alluded to, like they're going to have to make more and more ridiculous reasons to continue to print. And they have to print, right? Like, I don't see a way out of them printing. Luckily, this time we have an escape valve, right, with Bitcoin. So, you know, thankfully for that. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, because, like, not everyone's going to get on the lifeboat. And those people, like, imagine being a retiree, you're 65, 70, and things have just kind of worked out your whole life, right? Because, you know, you were born into prosperity, and now we're at this end of this 90-year debt cycle, and there's nowhere to go. So, anyone that's on a fixed income is going to be in for a lot of hurt in this coming decade. We're going to transition, and it's eventually going to be better, but there's going to be so much pain in the near term. It's going to be kind of catastrophic for a lot of people, unfortunately.
I completely agree, and you know, it's crazy because so many people are coming to this conclusion. You know, you have Ron Paul, the famous you know, libertarian politician. You have Max Kaiser. You have Jack Dorsey recently tweeted hyperinflation. And then he quit Twitter a month later. Weird there. Just pointing it out. I'm not giving my opinion. But look, it can't be that everyone's seeing, you know, the writing on the wall, so to speak. And the propaganda, because that's really what it is just getting more and more ridiculous. Like, it's getting laughable at this point. You're reading that. And look, Wall Street Journal, like, you would read that 10 years ago or 20 years ago. That's a very reputable newspaper. You'd be like, oh, it's from the Wall Street Journal. You know, you see your dad with the paper, just, you know, it's like, it's the Wall Street Journal. But you're reading this, and it's coming from those sources, and you're like, this is ridiculous. It's like, we all know you're fucking lying. Like, and we showed you guys a couple, you know, it's like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, when the Fed announced they were going to raise, you know, they suspect that rates are going to be at this point by 2023. And, you know, it was a whole sheet on the wall on the New York Times, and they had a very nice graphic, and it was just like, man, it's just so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. But anyways, you protect yourself from all this, right? It's a Bitcoin show, and the reason we're pointing this out is because we're pointing out the ridiculousness of the fiat world that we think is collapsing. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that this whole fiat system, man, it's on its last legs, but nobody knows. But anyways, if you want to hedge your bet a little bit or protect yourself, get on the orange life raft that is Bitcoin. But anyways, Phil, there was an open source software release today. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
Software releases. The software releases are brought to you by CypherSafe. Check them out, cyphersafe.io. This is the Cypher Wheel, the safest place to store your seed. Check this out, steel wheel, that's right. You could even stick a lock through it. Anyways, pet proof, tamper proof, fill proof, and as of yesterday, Nico proof. The link is down below in the show notes. We've got a Morton version 0.5.7 that was released. It's down below. And guys, Don't forget, rain or shine, Monday through Saturday, that's right. I'm remembering the dates now consistently. You can find us audio only, right? We've got the audio only episodes. We're on Pocket Casts. We're on Anchor. We are on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify. And soon we're going to be on more platforms. Don't forget to check us out. We always post. We'll let you know if we don't.
Awesome. Thank you, Phil. All right, guys, that was our show. Before we go, we want to give a very special shout out to our awesome guest, Mind/Matter. You can go follow him on Twitter. His handle is Raw Egg Nationalism. There's no I, so nationalism. Anyways, guys, that was our show. If you enjoyed the show, you know what to do. Smash that like button. And of course, if you want to continue hearing the catastrophic fails from the shitcoin developers, the central bankers, all the same, and the Bitcoin news from the play perspective, definitely consider subscribing. And we'll see you tomorrow, guys, for a brand new episode of Simply Bitcoin.
Governments and corporate-owned media are selling us so much sizzle, they forgot what they were cooking a long time ago.